We have a familiar face with us today. Hopefully, this guy will be joining us on a pretty regular basis coming up. I wanted to welcome back TJ Void, an educator, podcaster, coach based in Houston, also the father of a small dictator, as am I. TJ, tell me that you're a toddler dad without telling me you're a toddler dad.
Let's see. No nap, right, equals no evening fun for anyone. No nap is no evening fun for anyone. Also, the first taste of orange juice meant I had to take my son outdoors because the house couldn't contain his energy.
Unreal.
The sugar was overtaking his body.
I always wonder, like, if it's a toddler boy thing, and I hate to be so like gendered about it, but I do, from talking to other parents with toddler boys, I really do think there is a difference in the behavior of toddler boys and toddler girls. Like, my son is completely just uncontrollable as well. I mean, he's a complete fucking maniac all the time.
Right. I think it is, man. I think it's the whole maturity thing, right? Because my sister actually has a set of twins that are a girl and a boy. And when they turned about three, you know, people say terrible twos, but three is the age. When they turned three, she was kind of calm and she would even look at him sometimes like, dude, what is going on with you? You know, meanwhile, he's flipping off the side of the couch and standing on his head to watch TV, just weird stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it is, man. Boys just, I think it's this flip that they just flip the switch. It's like, wait a minute. Certain things just don't hurt anymore. So they just, it's just, it's all downhill from there, man. Then they spend, I say this often, they spend the entirety of their days just trying to commit suicide the whole time.
100%. Death
jumping
wish.
Off of stuff. Like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah. Death wish, man. We're at the park yesterday and I was throwing the ball for the dog and I turn around and this dude is climbing up this like sheer wall of a play structure that has those like, you know, rock climbing kind of handhold things just by himself, just cruising up it. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's what we're doing now. So I like, you know, turn around and run over. Unfortunately, he's fine. But like, yeah, things like that constantly happening.
They do teach you though. They do teach you that oftentimes as parents, we kind of hamstring our kids because we don't want them to get hurt.
Yeah.
But they can do a lot more. Than we think, and they figure it out. And he's, you know, my son is, you know, he doesn't have fears of things you should be afraid of.
Yeah.
Like he'll run full speed into stuff. But if there's a small, tiny, itty bitty little bug on the window, outside the window of the car, he's freaking out.
Yeah.
But there's just no balance, no rationale there.
You can't be rational with a two-year-old. No, right?
The sad part is 30 years from now it's not much different. So
true. What it is. True. It is what Wait, it is. Hey, why you gotta out us like that, man?
That's true.
All right, so let's get into it, man. So lead us into this discussion.
Yeah, so we're having, you know, as the sports calendar starts to ramp up some, right? The NBA is getting to the playoffs. Baseball is starting. One of the things that have started to have more talk about, obviously, is the NFL draft. So, and we all know crown jewels of all NFL drafts are quarterbacks, right? But with the shift, man, in the society, as well as just what the NFL quarterback looks like and what the NFL quarterback requires, there has been a curious case of Justin Fields. You know who Justin Fields, we know he's been number two, you know, in this class since they were in high school, and Trevor Lawrence were 1 and 2. But all of a sudden, no games being played. He's just starting to take this little bit of a dive. This narrative is starting to build about him, and it's starting to build momentum, unfortunately. A part of that narrative is that he's bad at making progressions. Okay, so what are your thoughts about quarterbacks losing or gaining momentum when there's no games being played? Secondly, tell me what you feel about this case of this narrative being built around Justin Fields.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, it's tough, I think, to judge guys when they're not playing, right? Like you said before off air, you're like, tail of the tape, right? Like, why don't we judge these guys based on what we can see? So Justin Fields hasn't played a game since January, right? And here we are sitting in April. And last we saw of him, he was playing incredibly well in the college football semifinal, right? He broke his ribs basically.
Six touchdowns, right?
Throws for six TDs, and he's just absolutely crushing people. Next thing we see of him, the next performance we see of him, he's running a 4.4, right? He's six, what is he, 6'3", 230, something like that. He's a big dude. Yep. He's a big dude with a cannon, and he's running a 4.4. That's just ridiculous. So the things that we know about him that we can physically see about him are all clearly excellent, and clearly his ceiling is really, really, really high, right? So it seems to me that the narrative emerging around him is a little bit unfair, honestly. And like, I think you can touch more on this as well, but it seems like a lot of black quarterbacks, when they're coming out, run into this, particularly after the GameStop, right? Particularly at places like the Senior Bowl, and after they've been done playing any games. And now all that's happening is the jockeying on the draft board, right? So what really prompted a lot of this too is the Niners trading up a few weeks ago to the third spot, because everyone knew they were going to take a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, your boy, not really your boy, Zach Wilson, jumps to number two. Everybody's saying the Jets are going to take him at number two. So now really it's a debate about who's going to go three. And it seems clear, like, obviously, Justin Fields is number three. But now there's all this stuff coming out about Mac Jones, and the Niners may be taking Mac Jones. And it seems like really thinly veiled racism to me. So my guess is you have a similar take. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. There's just, I mean, let's talk about the coded language. Or it's not even coded anymore. We know
it. It's not.
Right.
It's
we can decipher through the nonsense, like not making progressions. Well, the thing about it is that narrative stems from the Senior Bowl, right? Because I'm reading an article in the Ringer, on the Ringer, and it was saying how actually he actually threw past his first read more than any of the other four quarterbacks that's supposed to be in the first round. And it was a 2% margin between him at about 19% and the next dude at about 17, lower than 17. So that narrative should have died then, right? Just because the numbers are what they are. But then you go into the Senior Bowl and there's just one guy who says, well, he had trouble. You know, he really hit the first target a lot. It's like, well, we're at the Senior Bowl. So my first target is probably an NFL receiver.
Right.
Of course he's open. Right. You know, and why are we judging this guy based off of an exhibition game when we have 3 years of actual footage in real games in the Big Ten, where a lot of pros come from, right? Like, why does one weigh more than the other? And it's just, I think it's because, I didn't even think about this till you said it, but I think it's because the reason why these narratives change after the game stop is because there's nothing to refute them. It's all, it's just talk. And it's just, now we have to go on what we think now, as opposed to what we can actually see, right? And for a guy like Wilson from BYU to just shoot up the charts out of nowhere, he wasn't even, I think I saw one article where he was going into the season, he was ranked 50.
Yeah.
Right. He was the 50th rated guy quarterback. And now all of a sudden he's a shoo-in at number two. When have we ever even seen that work? Like, when is that a guy that just comes out of nowhere and gets drafted to top five to work out? That rarely works.
Yeah.
And so I think that, it's still an uncomfortability with black guys leading your team at the quarterback position. There was also a narrative with Justin Fields that says that he was, Dan Orlovsky on ESPN just came out of nowhere and said that he heard that he was a last guy in, first guy out kind of guy, which that don't even match any of the production that he has. Yeah. And it's incredibly irresponsible. Because he did try to come back and apologize after speaking to the Ohio State coaches, which should have been his only source anyway. That's the only place he's played.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know, man. I think that there is there's still a level of discomfort with having a black quarterback, and it's just standing up there amongst 30 white owners, right? Majority white coaches, and saying, this is our guy. He's the guy that's going to be the face. Again, quarterbacks have to be the face of your program.
Yeah.
For better or for worse.
Yeah.
And he's going to lead us to the promised land. I'm not sure that a lot of these guys have a level of comfort necessary to take that stance. Yeah.
Well, I think
because still you also still got to take it to the fan base. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I think you're right. I mean, I think a lot of what you're saying makes sense because the narrative doesn't match with the facts in a lot of cases, right? Like there's this narrative about his work ethic, but the guys that know him the best, his coach comes out and says, nah, this is bullshit. Like he's the hardest worker. Guys are drawn to him.
Right.
He's a leader. We were talking off air about how Justin Fields was pushing the Big Ten to play this season. He's getting guys together to work out. Clearly is a leader, right? He looks like the face of a franchise. If you look at him, he looks like a face of a franchise.
He,
right? he looks like a dude that knows what he's doing. He looks responsible. He looks like a leader. So that narrative doesn't really match with the facts. And I think part of what's going on to take it into the social psych a little bit, part of what's going on is that when everything suggests that a guy is at the top, it's impossible for somebody to justify being prejudiced against him, right? So if he's clearly the best on making progressions in terms of his athleticism, his leadership, his intangibles, all this stuff, it's impossible for anybody to say, no, he shouldn't go in the top two or three, right? Because it's just so counter to what you can see about him. But as soon as you question one of those capabilities, as soon as you make a dent in his kind of impeccable qualifications, that allows you to justify the prejudice that you have against him, right? So just that one little nick says, okay, this guy's bad at making progressions, or he doesn't lead in the way he's supposed to lead.
Wow.
That enables you to justify the rest of the bullshit, basically, that you say about the guy.
I didn't even think about that, man. That makes a lot of sense, because if you don't want to draft him because you don't feel comfortable with a black quarterback, you got to find a reason.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah, man, that makes a lot of sense. But that's pretty much, that's, if we want to get down to the link between how this is racist, that's pretty much the foundational crux of racism. Like, I'm going to just make this stuff up to justify my treatment of you.
Yep.
Right? Wow. So that's, this, it's just not even thinly veiled anymore. We know what it is. Like, us, you know, I'd rather them just come out and say, I don't feel comfortable with a black guy leaving my program. Just go back to their hothouse, wherever they go. But the crazy thing about these narratives is, like you said, they don't match. But also, when there are facts present, like Trevor Lawrence, who's been the number one guy since he was in high school, okay? Yeah. He's won all the games. He's got the long hair. He comes into Clemson. He starts right away. He wins right away. There is a level of entitlement there. And entitlement is a prerequisite for complacency. Complacency leads to laziness. It's just lack of attention to detail, right? And so if you don't have that internal fire, that and external motivation that like a Tom Brady has for being picked in the sixth round, or having a split time with Drew Hanlon in college, things like that, it's hard to manufacture it. And he even said that himself. He comes out and says, you know, it's not Super Bowl to die for me. Like, I'm not that kind of guy. Nothing like that doesn't even, it hits the radar for one of the guys on ESPN. I forget his name. He escapes me.
He
even came out and said, if Justin Fields were to say he would be, he would go in the third round.
Yeah. He'd be crushed.
You know? You remember when Michael Vick said that he didn't study film? Like this was,
And
they killed him for it.
Crushed, man.
Killed him.
Yeah.
Didn't even matter how that he was the only guy at the time to ever have $200 million contract due to his production.
Doesn't matter.
Killed him because he said that.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I heard an analogy, and I'll cut it short. I heard an analogy a while back that said that a lot of times when white people are uncomfortable with black guys, it's because they view them as if you would view a gorilla. Like you raise it, you know all its ins and outs, you feed it, you take care of it, but in your mind, you're thinking this gorilla can turn into a violent gorilla at any point, and there's nothing I can do about it because that's a gorilla, right? And so they're thinking the same thing. And so you sit back. Yeah. If you're uncomfortable, like you said, as soon as one pseudo thing presents itself, it's like, I knew it. Right. I knew that we can't take this guy because of ABCD. And so we're going to go with this guy who they call fit the part, which we know that fit the part just means all American looking white guy.
Right. You know, so, exactly.
Yeah. That's,
I think that was what was most shocking to me about the,
that's crazy.
The Trevor. I was going to say that was what was most shocking about the Trevor Lawrence story, because he, even to feel that he had the space to say something like that, right? Like you said, if Justin Fields wouldn't even ever consider saying that, first of all, but it just, it further highlights the different standards that these guys are being held to. and that they have to live up to these very different things, right? Like Justin Fields wouldn't consider saying that. And if he did say it, yeah, he'd go like in the third round if he got drafted at all, despite the fact that for years, as you said, these two guys were jockeying to be one at number one and number two. And there were arguments to be made that Justin Fields should be number one, even over Trevor Lawrence.
Right. Right. Absolutely. But that's not what Trevor Lawrence looks the part.
Yeah.
You know, I remember that Colin Cowherd used to go on rants about quarterbacks that wore their hats backwards.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's that much of a position where they think you have to look and feel and present a certain way, regardless of what you do on the field. And it's just like you said, if there are mistakes made on the field, they will link it to that one chink in your armor, even if it's just alleged chink in your armor as a justification of why you're not performing well in this one particular game.
Yeah,
man, that is crazy.
It makes makes me think of the reason I brought up the justification of prejudice thing is it makes me think of these social psych studies where they present people with fake college applicants and they provide sort of made up qualifications for them. So either they're like their GPA and their SAT scores are really good, or the GPA and SATs are really bad, or they're mixed, right? They have one good one and one bad one. And the weird thing emerges with the mixed qualification applicants. So the people that are prejudiced, you don't see any difference between prejudiced people and non-prejudiced people and how they judge the people with good or all bad qualifications. But where you see a difference is how they judge the mixed qualification applicants. People that have prejudice judge the mixed qualifications applicants that are Black to be worse than the mixed qualification applicants that are white. Right. So they're using that one thing, again, the fact that they have a good or bad SAT score or whatever, to justify the fact that they have this prejudice, because nobody can then come at them and say, well, you only mark this person down because they were Black. They'd say, well, look, they had a shitty SAT score. That's why I marked them down. Right. So they're using this one, like you said, chink in the armor to justify that prejudice that they have, to rationalize the prejudice that they have. And I think what's and again, I'll cut this off, but I think what's important about that is there's other research that shows holding on to that kind of relatively benign prejudice allows people to hold on to and engage in more overt and more discriminatory forms of prejudice too, right? So it's not just that people hold on to these like kind of sort of negative attitudes, but it allows them to hold on to stereotypes that are much more severe as well. I think we just see that playing out here.
They're part of that bigger picture, right?
Yeah.
They're part of that bigger picture. Like, again, we know that the narratives that are linked to Black quarterbacks are not far. Actually, you know what? I would say that they're first cousins, if not bedfellows, with the exact same ideas of Black people in general. Lazy, unintelligent, physically gifted, but not necessarily cerebral. And so, which is odd because in today's NFL, you need to be athletic to be the quarterback, right? Yeah. Think about the good quarterbacks. See, they're the outside of Tom Brady, right? Who stands and deliver in the pocket and are effective quarterbacks, Super Bowl contending quarterbacks.
Yeah, nobody anymore.
Russell Wilson, no. Pat Mahomes, heck, Aaron Rodgers, he was praised for being able to throw off schedule, different platforms, high low, cross his body, all of that stuff. Yep. And so for that now to be some sort of detriment, because I run a 4.4 and I'm 6'3", you know, 220, and I look like this, and I can't. For that to be used as a detriment is just prejudice and discrimination in its purest form, you know? And it's just like you said, it's just smaller, those small puzzles for the bigger picture of just prejudice in general, right? Those large, more overt forms of prejudice, which kind of leads us to our next discussion point, man, is that, which is, you know, we all know that COVID has kind of taken over, you know, our lives. It's a part of our lives now, right? We're never going to get rid of it. It just is what it is. We're already over a year into this thing, which at the time I never thought it would be a whole year, let alone,
seriously,
you know, where we're at now. But so as the bubble started to happen and sports started to pick up, vaccines started to come out. right? And there was a push some for everybody to get it once it becomes available. So how do you feel about these, such as the, I'll take the NBA, for example. They're not making it mandatory, but they're giving you incentives if you have it, right? Yeah. You can bring more crowd in. Players don't have to go through the protocol as hard. And they have NBA, like they have NBA sanctioned advertisement around the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts about just using those persuasion tactics like that in terms of vaccinations?
Yeah, I actually think it's brilliant, honestly. I mean, I have been to my, Twitter following of 7, I've been espousing this kind of approach for a while. I mean, I think it's actually really important to get athletes, especially prominent athletes, on board with the vaccination or with the vaccine campaign, because to put it simply, people will listen to them, right? It may not be directly, it may not go from LeBron saying get vaccinated to a one-to-one where every single person who sees him gets vaccinated, but that does have an impact on people. And the media's role is to do what's called agenda setting, which is the idea that the media shapes what people are thinking about, how they're thinking about, how they're talking about it. And so I think particularly with some of the vaccine hesitancy that we're seeing, which is predominantly in white evangelical men, but then it's closely followed after that by Black and Latino communities, I think particularly to get those folks talking about it and try to create some more buy-in will help combat some of the inequity that we've seen around COVID in the first place. So I'm all for it. And I think, I want to hear your take, but I think we can get into even more what those kinds of campaigns should even look like.
Right. So two takes. What you said makes perfect sense. But two takes for me. One, as a Black man, I was initially hesitant, just because, as we spoke off mic, the health of Black people has never been at the forefront of American society. So now for them all of a sudden to care about us to this degree where they're wanting us to get vaccinated, I'm like, well, why? What's the agenda behind it? Just because that's historically, that has been something that has been a true thing, right? It's something that's happened in the nasty, if you look on the underbelly of American society. But also, I do think that there is value in people such as athletes coming out and saying that they're being vaccinated and understanding. But I think it'd be more valuable. Number one, I don't feel like it's an obligation. There was an author, an article I read that a guy was linking the magnitude of your Black Lives Matter support to LeBron James specifically, to LeBron James advocacy or lack thereof of the vaccination. Now, granted, he don't know if LeBron has gotten it. He don't know if his family has gotten it. He don't know his family medical history. He knows nothing. Yeah. What he's saying is you're LeBron James. Black people follow you. You say you care about Black people. So you need to advocate for this vaccination for a disease that has killed Black people in a disproportionate level. I don't think that's the tactic. I think because I don't think that you should speak about anything that you don't know about. And I think advertising is good, but you need to be able to explain what it does and how it helps in language that is easily understood by everyone, right? Yeah. Because if it's a bunch of medical terms and jargon, I tune it out, and it makes it seem like you're trying to confuse me.
Yep.
Right. Just even when my wife was having a kid, the doctor came in talking fast and saying this, that, and the third. I'm like, oh, I don't understand any of this. Yep. You know, this is already a high stress situation. If I'm in these communities that have seen people die, that I've experienced people die at a high rate, and now you're coming and telling me I should take a vaccination, I don't understand. Yeah. Knowing that there's been environmental factors, societal factors that has aided the poor health of Black people to begin with, why do you care now, right?
Yeah.
So
you have to dispel that hesitancy. You have to, I'm trying to think of the right word. You have to push back. You have to get rid of, but help people to understand
right.
or better said, you have to get a better understanding of the hesitancy that people have. And that's what I'm trying to say, right? Like the messaging that's out there has to account for the fact that there is this degree of mistrust, right? And, mm-hmm. and I think that plenty of people in media have talked about like, oh, there's mistrust of the medical community and within the Black community. And like, yeah, no shit. Of course there is. Like you haven't given that community any reason to trust you. So of course right. there's mistrust. And so right. the messaging around it has to account for that fact and has to do something to try to gain that trust. And I think part of it and part of it is who's talking about these issues and who's explaining them. Right. Like the most prominent voice has been Fauci. Fauci is great. I think he's one of the most trusted Americans, right? To get 80%+ of Americans to agree on anything is shocking. But the fact is there are still a lot of people who don't trust him or don't understand what he's saying. And you know, to your point about being in the delivery room with your wife, like you're a highly educated guy. And if you can't understand what your doctor right. is trying to explain to you, something's wrong. So I think it points right. at a fundamental problem with the way that we communicate science and the way that we communicate these kinds of heady things to the general population, which is that there's always this disconnect. Like scientists, and I have a PhD, I'm a scientist, I do research. Right. Scientists often are trained to speak in these kind of heady terms, and we're not mm-hmm. trained to explain things that are more in a way that's more accessible. And I think that would be really helpful as well.
And that makes sense, because I was just going to ask you, do you think, because here's coming from my point of view, right? It's like, as just, you know, I'm an educated guy, but layman terms when it comes to medical things make more sense to me. Even when my wife is a physical therapist, I have to, yeah. She starts going and going and going. And I'm like, hold on.
I don't
even know what this is, you know?
Yeah.
And the assumption of knowledge, you know, the assumption is the poison pill to any relationship, right? Yeah. And so the assumption of knowledge is actually detrimental to gaining that knowledge. Because yep. like you said, it's like, do you even know what I'm confused about before you start right. just telling me right. I shouldn't be confused? Because
right.
for me, but the question I was going to ask, what I was getting to is it, do you feel like it's done purposely, or is it something that just happens? Which also, as I'm asking it in my brain and you know, translating out loud, that question in and of itself is just a reflection of mistrust,
yep.
right? Like, are you totally. Doing this on purpose? Like, are you trying to confuse totally. Me on purpose? And, yep. and so I'm thinking about it now. And it's like you said, they're not even taught to convey messages to the people who they probably see the most.
Yeah.
You know yep. what I mean? Like these people have these factors that aid in the you know, the death rate of COVID within that community, because that wasn't even really spoken about this whole time. Yeah. And so the issues are never really spoken about. Now you're just coming in, you know, as again, coming from a Black man, now you're coming in with these white saviors dropping in this vaccine, say, yeah. hey, do this.
Here.
Yeah. Yeah. When it's yeah. before, I mean, there's been other things dropped in Black communities that were not great, you know,
right.
which
right.
we don't have to get into. But I'm just saying, now all of a sudden, this pressure is being translated to us. Yeah. We're like, how did we become the spokesperson, yeah. spokespeople for anything?
Yeah.
You know, we went from the bottom of this level of consideration to now being the spokespeople.
Yeah.
That, and it feels kind of like we're just doing your job, you know? And again, yeah. all of this, as I say it out loud, it speaks to the reflection of mistrust.
Yeah.
You know, because yeah. when I was in the delivery room with my wife, what added to my stress level was not only that, you know, I didn't understand what he was saying. He was speaking so fast. You know, I also know that Black women die giving birth exponentially higher than any other race. And so I'm like, there's all these factors that wasn't even considered
yeah.
by the doctor that's coming in, you know, who told me, you know, 3 weeks prior that he was going on a ski trip on this, you know, within this next week. So we need to have the baby, or we're going to have it with somebody else.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So
yep.
all of these things that are built upon are not considered. You're just trying to come sprinkle this vaccine over the top yep. of all of our concerns.
Yeah. I think that's
and it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it, TJ. I mean, you you said it, that you're coming in and sprinkling this and saying, all right, believe us now, right? When in reality, you've been given no reason to believe what people are trying to peddle. So that just, again, just reiterates the fact that I think the first step has to be to deal with this mistrust that exists, right? And to rebuild that. And one of the best ways that I think research would suggest to do that is to better explain things in a way that are accessible, right? If people have a better understanding of what exactly this vaccine is doing, why it's important to take it, why you should believe that this isn't going to have any adverse side effects, right? Like, if there's a way to explain those things in a way that's culturally accessible and that's relevant to the people that you're trying to convince, it has a much greater degree of being successful, where versus just coming in, like you said, with a white savior complex and saying, all right, take this shit. We need you to take it now. Now we care about your health. It's like, right. Oh, wait, where have you been for the last 450 years?
Seriously. And which also speaks to, because there are, you know, older white gentlemen telling us, which I'm sure they have pure intentions. You know, we're not trying to paint anybody as any sort of devils or that they have ill intent. But this also speaks to the pool of people that they have to choose from, which speaks to, you know, the lack of diversity within this medical field. Like, there aren't enough young, you know, Hispanics or Latinx or, you know, Black individuals, yeah, male or female, to come and sit down and have conversations to kind of bridge that gap. You know, yeah, we're not saying you need to be exclusive. Like, this Black person, go speak to that Black crew. This Hispanic, right, go speak to that Hispanic. Right. This Latin. No. We can all sit together. And then maybe I can even explain to you, you know, where these questions are coming, exactly, from, why these questions, yeah, are prevalent. And that way we can have, whenever you go out, now you're more well-informed to be able to have these conversations more effectively. But if we don't ever create that pool of opportunity to even have those people to choose from, then this gap is going to be really hard to close. It's, yeah, going to be really, really hard to close, which, you know, we talked about it before. Wouldn't you just want the best people available, regardless of race, gender, creed, whatever? The best people available should be the ones who you're choosing from and the ones in that pool of opportunity. But that's just what American society has come to. And it's just, the COVID has just shined a light on, yeah, all those little things that we didn't really consider until now. It's like a life or death situation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man.
So let's bring it back to the core question, which was, what role can athletes play, mm-hmm, in helping to dispel some of this mistrust and getting, hopefully, increasing, mm-hmm, vaccine uptake in these communities? Like, do you see there being an effective role, mm-hmm, for athletes in that debate?
I do. I think that they can advocate for, I think they should advocate for gaining knowledge. Like, maybe not say get it or else, or don't get it because of this. Hey, here's what I did. I got the vaccine because here's how it affects me. You know, I'm on my second dose. I'm already 2 weeks. I'm considered fully vaccinated. Here's what that means. In 6 months, I have to get a booster. Go get your family history check. See how that stuff is more, to me, that sticks more because it's ownership of information, as opposed to saying do this or don't do this. That's how I think the advocacy should be. You know, showing Dr. J getting a shot doesn't do anything for me. You know, showing Bill Russell, that doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
Right? Because number one, are you following them in the next month to say, how did this affect you? You know, because I know for me, the second shot, the first shot, I slept for an entire day the next day, right? Other people, the second shot, you know, they had to take off work because they just felt terrible. For me, I had the chills for about 2 hours and I was good.
Yeah.
You know, so go through that, like the whole process. That's what I think. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, I think using those folks who have special access to certain communities as ways of providing knowledge, like you said, and ways of providing that really on the ground experiential information to help people set expectations. Like, all right, let's say I do decide to get this. What happens then? Where do I go? What's it going to feel like? Setting those expectations so that if and when people do get it, they have a good experience, a positive experience, which will hopefully make them more likely to recommend to their friends and colleagues and so on and so forth, right? And I think that in some ways is going to be the most important, is tapping into people that are like knowledge or thought leaders in a given community, right? And that can be as grassroots as you want it to be. That could be your pastor, your barber, that could be your friend, it could be your wife, it could be anybody, but people who you're going to listen to, whose trust maybe you have already, to say like, I did this, it was safe. Mm-hmm. My friends also got it. My family got it. We are still safe. And now it's protecting us. And it's a good idea for you to do this too. I think that's how athletes could be better used. As you said, provide that kind of hands-on information.
Absolutely, man. I think so. I think man, maybe they should put us up there on the panel. We'll tell them how it's done. NBA can pay us, cut us.
That's right.
To figure out this marketing campaign.
I got it, man. We're good. TJ, great to have you back, man. Anything else to add before we jump out of here? Fun.
Again, take people. This kind of brushes both topics, right? Take people for what they are, for what they've shown you, and what you think cannot supersede the facts. What you think does not supersede the facts. That's it. Just give me the facts. Give me the game film. What did he do against Michigan? Oh, he had 400 yards. Good enough for me. I don't care what he does in tights, right? How did the vaccine affect you? Okay, now that's something I can actually use because that's real knowledge, man. And that's it. Yeah. That's all I have.
Yeah, that is very well stated, sir. Before we get out of here, pitch your pod. I know you guys changed the name. Tell us what's going on with your podcast now.
We did, man. We changed the name to Solve for X. We actually just put out our second episode today. This time we take atypical approaches to solutions of modern issues. And the issues, our approach is not that we know the answers. We don't really have pre-pro meetings or anything like that. We come up with our topics and we just kind of talk through them live, right? So the first one was about consistency. So here it runs a gamut. And then the second one was dropped today is about, you know, mass shootings and then the aftermath. And so just give it a listen, man, and follow us on Twitter, we're Solve for X. On Instagram, we're Solve for X Show. And just tap in with us because we represent it like a community. Like we want your feedback so we can hear what people are saying, hear what they're feeling, and we can always jump back into a topic based on new information. And so that's about it.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Great to have you back, TJ. Please don't forget to rate and subscribe where applicable. As a reminder, you can find us on Twitter at HeadGamePsych. I'm on Twitter at BD Rosenberg, PhD, and this guy is on Twitter at TJ Boyd.
Easily done, easily found.
Beautiful. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you soon.